Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
One of the issues with our team right now is mental toughness, discipline, and execution.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Everybody, welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. Going to do a quick Florida preview here before the Florida State game. As always, this podcast brought to you by the combination of Lewis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville and Garage Makeovers in South Florida. So if you have any needs in either of those areas, get in touch with those good folks. Thanks to them for sponsoring this season of the Unconquered Podcast, which has, their help has been great. And again, you guys definitely helped me by making sure that they know where you're hearing about them from when you're going through their business. So thanks for that. Now, as for the Florida State game, this one's going to be an interesting one, guys. And ladies, there are a lot of lady Knowles out there who I hear from on this podcast, who send me all sorts of Q&A stuff. This is going to be an interesting one. I am looking forward to how competitive I think this game is going to be. As always, Florida and Florida State, when they go at each other, there's a lot of passion on that field. A lot of these guys grew up together, played against each other. Whereas the fans, generally speaking, there's a lot of sort of cultural disconnect and all that. With players, it's a little different because there's that kind of respect that these people have. They're the brothers who went to the wrong place, kind of thing. So looking forward to seeing that once again, seeing it in Doak Campbell. I imagine that there's going to be a better crowd this week than there was last week, which should help as well. But the more I've looked at this game, the more it looks an awful lot like what we just saw with Boston College. Now, Florida is better than Boston College. They've been better this year. They've got, that win against LSU, that win at Mississippi State. That's a very strong Mississippi State team. Those are solid wins. They were competitive with Georgia for a little bit, not for very long, but for a little bit. But they had two solid wins on the year with at Mississippi State and LSU that are better wins than anybody that Boston College had beaten. But I will say, as you look at Florida down the stretch, Georgia kind of broke them, is what it looks like to me. You look through their win expectancies. So if you go to Mississippi State, 92%, playing really well. LSU, 78%. At Vanderbilt, 98%. Then you get Georgia, 6%. Then the week following, Missouri, 1%. That's not a great Missouri team. Then South Carolina back to 91%. Better result there, even though they only won that game by 4. And then, obviously, Idaho in the warm-up to this one, and they're going to be plenty rested after facing Idaho, whereas Florida State, they had a very physical game last week against Boston College. So that's if there is some benefit that's going to be gained there, it's going to be on Florida's side. But overall, they've not been as solid this late in the year as they were earlier in the year. And really, the drop off has primarily been on defense. You look at their percentile performance on defense against Georgia, 32nd. Missouri, 18th, South Carolina, 50th. And you compare those to earlier in the year, and they were higher earlier in the year. So they defensively, they've not been quite as good as in this latter quarter of the year as they were earlier in the year. So that's going to be interesting in itself. But in terms of the matchups, that's where I think this gets interesting, because Florida is an offense that depends on being able to run the football with some success. And not just run with success, they're not running with a bunch of explosiveness. They're not a big play offense really overall. I mean, you look at rushing, they're 90th in explosiveness. They've got big backs, Lamical Pirine, however you pronounce his first name, Lamical Pirine at 227, Scarlett at 210, Felipe Franks at 240, Damian Pierce also has 60 carries on the year at 216. They got some big backs, and they're running a lot of power, a lot of quarterback power, and basically they are trying to matriculate the ball down the field. They've got a pretty good offensive line that has stayed healthy, which has been huge. They've been able to keep continuity there. But basically they've been able to, in the games where they've won, they've been able to consistently just keep ahead of the chains, keep leverage, and that's how they've won games. And if there's something that I think it's really difficult to do against this Florida State team as a rule, it's that. This Florida State team will give up some big plays, but they're not going to, it's not going to be easy for anybody to just line up and pound them because of those defensive tackles, because of the quality up front on the defensive line. But it's harder to do. And now, actually, this is where I think the Boston College game ends up being very helpful for Florida State, because in terms of what they're going to see, in terms of blocking scheme, in terms of the approach, Florida is actually closer to what Boston College ran out there. The biggest difference is that they're going to use a lot more 11-man running game. They're going to run Felipe Franks a bunch. And again, this is Dan Mullen offense. And for Dan Mullen's offense, a quarterback is basically another running back. You're going to see the quarterback run the ball a lot and run the ball between the tackles a lot. And he's going to battering ram. He's going to go battering ram at times with this quarterback. And, you know, especially when you got a quarterback like Franks, who's an inconsistent thrower. I mean, 58% completion rate, and not even as impressive as that completion rate would suggest. I mean, when you look at Franks, he's down right just north of DeAndre Francois in adjusted completion percentage as a quarterback, which tells you how inefficient he's been. Looking at Pro Football Focus's stats, which are, again, those are special to this podcast. Not many folks have access to those. But Francois at about 67.4%. percent in terms of adjusted completion percentage, that takes care of, you know, adjusts for drops and, you know, bad a receiver being in a bad spot due to a bad route or whatever. Felipe Franks only about a percentage point higher at 68.3, and you compare that to, say, Gardner Minshew 80.7, or, you know, looking at some other quarterbacks that Florida State has played against. Let's see, down the list a little bit, Trevor Lawrence at 75.8%. He's not, you know, we're not talking about Trevor Lawrence here. And more to the point, when you're looking at those wide receivers, Van Jefferson is the one receiver they've got that really scares you. And it's because of his route running capabilities, you know, got good size at 6'2", but, you know, he came out of high school super developed because his dad's an NFL coach, NFL receivers coach, and a guy who played in the NFL himself. So, and Florida State, by the way, has played against Jefferson as a true freshman a couple years ago at Ole Miss. You know, that's the one guy you got to worry about. Other than that, you know, Tyree Cleveland, he's a nice receiver. Trayvon Grimes, he's a nice receiver. You know, he's got some good speed, but, and, you know, Kadarius Toney, That's their athlete in the slot, but and Josh Hammond is the one guy that, you know, maybe has a little bit more get up and go in terms of that. But there's not really a guy there that terrifies you as a playmaker like what you had with Clemson, or, you know, the size problem that you had with Notre Dame. But, you know, they're more straightforward in that regard. You know, Grimes down the line might become something a little bit more, but, you know, he's in as much as he's 6'5" and runs well. But again, they're not going to scare you a bunch down the field in terms of a bunch of big plays, as long as you play solid coverage. And the biggest thing you can do with Florida is force them is get some tackles for a loss, force them into situations that are not favorable leverage wise, and all of a sudden their offense is completely different. if they're able to push you around up front and they're able to stay ahead of those sticks, they're going to be a totally different team. But this is where what Florida State did against Boston College, they just played against a team that does that. And beyond that, they made the adjustment, and I think a very good defensive adjustment, a necessary defensive adjustment, of going big at the linebacker spots. So now at your Will linebacker and your Mike backer, you go 235, 240. And against this Florida group, that's exactly what you want to do. You want to have Jackson, Dontavius Jackson, at your Will linebacker, where he played actually really well. Looking through the film session that I posted this week, if you haven't seen that, Jackson played pretty dang well at that Will linebacker spot. And then you've got that Mike backer spot, where you've got another big player, another big physical guy, a little less physical than Dontavius in that sense, but in Warner, a guy who's actually bigger than Dontavius Jackson. So now you can match up size-wise a bit more, and those guys did a pretty good job of coming up and playing the run against Boston College, limiting what A.J. Dillon could do. Now, yeah, they're going to run the quarterback more, so that provides an additional element there. But Florida State matches up pretty well with what Florida does defense, or Florida State's defense matches up pretty well with what Florida does offensively. So as I've broken this down, I'm going, huh, Florida's the better team. They've been the better team than Florida State all year. But then you look at that matchup and you go, you know, in terms of what they should be able to do, I'm not sure Florida projects to have a whole lot more success offensively than what Boston College did. I think they're a little better, but are they going to have a whole lot more success than what BC did? I'm not as sure. So that's an interesting one right there. Now, defensively, they're better than Boston College, I think, by a good amount. Now, the thing is, they are different defensively than Boston College. Boston College was a team that just doesn't let you have a bunch of big plays. And Florida State beat them on one big play that basically turned the game. But essentially, Florida is kind of the opposite. Florida's a team that they're going to give up some explosive plays on occasion on defense, but they're going to try to keep you behind the sticks and play a bunch of and put a lot of pressure on you. I mean, this is a Todd Grantham defense. They're going to blitz the heck out of you. I have a hard time believing that Grantham's going to have the discipline to just stay back and take the Boston College approach and say, we're going to play over the top and we're going to force you to run the ball down the field on us. This is a guy who just can't not blitz. It's just temperamentally, that's how he's wired. And so I look at that and I go, you know, they also give up some plays. Looking at, you know, defensively, standard downs, Florida's 59th in giving up explosive plays. Pretty good in terms of limiting how well you're going to play down to down. I mean, Florida State's not going to run the ball down the field on them in terms of just efficiently pushing those guys around. Florida's decent up front. Really, their strength is at their edge. Their edges are pretty good. Ja'Chai Polite is, you know, he's an NFL guy. They're not as good in the interior, though. They're not, you know, they don't have the defensive tackles that, say, Florida State does. But you know, the problem is that Florida State doesn't have offensive tackles, and if you've got quality edges, that's going to be a problem. So that's going to present a problem. But the thing is, if you're Florida State, you just need to break two or three plays to have a good chance. And that makes this interesting. That makes this matchup really interesting because you got strength on strength in terms of Florida's offense against Florida State's defense. Florida wants to bludgeon you down the field, and Florida State is that boxer with the really, really good chin. They're not going to let you just bludgeon them. They're not going to get pushed around. At least not. I don't think they will in this game. In terms of when they decide to turn it on and when they play like they should, that group, they're capable of standing up and not getting pushed around, particularly now that they've got the different makeup at linebacker in terms of the two bigger guys there. So then I think that means that's probably going to be a lower scoring side of the ball, and that gives you a chance. Then all you need is a few plays on defense or on offense, a few big plays, and once again, it's sort of, I mean, the whole thing, Florida State's offense is a weakness versus Florida's strength on defense. But the one place where Florida State's strongest offensively happens to line up with a little bit of Florida's slightly higher weakness on defense. If you had to pick a place where Florida was going to be a little weaker, it happens to match up with what Florida State does do well offensively, and that's create some big plays, particularly, you know, Tamori and Terry these last few games, but creating some big plays in the passing game, that they're going to have some chances against Florida to do that, because they are going to blitz. They are going to bring pressure. They are going to try to force Florida State not to be able to run the football. So Florida State's going to have some chances to go play action and win down the field. And, you know, if Francois plays like he did in the first half against Boston College, then they're not going to win. But if he plays, you know, more like what he did late against Boston College, they got a chance. If he plays basically like he did against Notre Dame, Florida State may win this game. It's going to be an interesting game. I'm going to take a couple questions. I'm going to answer a couple questions before I wrap the podcast, but just leaving it at that for a moment before I get to these other questions. So a couple questions came in after the last podcast. One is, there's strong chatter that Josh Ball is coming back next year. What are your sources saying? If he comes to Florida State, do you pencil him in at left tackle? I've heard some rumblings about that as well. I wouldn't rule it out. My sources have said nothing specifically about it. Like my more or less firsthand sources, I've not gotten anything definitive there. I mean, again, I've heard some stuff through the grapevine, but that's different from actually getting something from a source that I really trust. So, I mean, I would put that in the possibility camp, but not in a position where I necessarily expect it on the basis of having heard something definitive. That said, if he does come to Florida State, yeah, you pencil him in at left tackle. He's far better than any left tackle or right tackle that Florida State has. Yeah, you pencil him in. And then next question, if you could play Landon Dickerson anywhere in the offensive line, where do you play him? Do you think he's a better guard than a tackle? Yeah, he's a better guard than a tackle. On this offensive line, though, if I had to play him anywhere, it would be a tackle, because the tackle position's so bad. But yes, Dickerson is ideally, you play him at guard, where he's in this offense able to pull a good bit and really use that athleticism and really be a guy that can cause some problems with the head of steam, because he's got a nasty streak and you let him do that. Another thing. One thing Willie Taggart needs to do is work the refs more. I'm not saying you go after him as hard as Jimbo did, but he needs to be in their ear more to get the next call to go your way. I know you're a coach. What are your thoughts about working the refs? Do you think Willie needs to work them more? Yes, I do think he needs to work them more. I do agree that you don't necessarily want to go full Jimbo. I mean, everybody knows you don't go full Jimbo. But I do think it's important that you have the ear of the officials, and that you let them know that you're going to hold them accountable, and that you want to make sure that they are hearing from you on a regular basis, that you're calling out holding, that you're calling out different. You want to just constantly be framing the game to the guys on your side of the field. It's an important thing to do, just so that they know what they should be looking for from your perspective. And then that does impact them. That does influence them. That's important to do. And then beyond that, he needs to be more aggressive at times about taking a timeout and pushing for a review, or taking, you know, giving extra time to do some of that stuff. There've been a few mistakes on that this year in terms of really pushing to get a call changed and making a bit of a scene until it's looked at. And I think that's something that he needs to do a bit more. Yeah, I think that's true. So I do agree with that. All right. Last thing, I've gotten a number of questions about this. Sam Howell just officially visited UNC. He likes UNC. Since you know that school well, is Larry Fedora on the hot seat this year? Will he be back as head coach next year? This could be a decision if Howell stays committed to FSU. Well, first things first, Larry Fedora's seat is not just hot, it is pretty close to nuclear at this point. As of about 3 weeks ago, my best sources around the UNC program, and I've got some really good ones, were saying that no decision had been made, and that, you know, they because of the size of the buyout and all that, there was preference to bring him back as long as things just didn't really tank. And then things really, really tanked even further. And I think at this point, Larry Fedora is going to get fired. The word around is that the most likely guy to get hired is going to be Satterfield, the App State coach, which, you know, that again, Howell does like UNC institutionally. He grew up a UNC fan. So there, you know, we'll see how that relationship would go. I mean, Satterfield is a guy that is from closer to Howell. I mean, down at App State, that's only about an hour and a half from where Howell's playing his football. And Satterfield certainly has some relationship there. But I don't think that would be enough for Howell to necessarily pull the trigger and make that switch. And I just think in the process of all that change, I think it's the sort of thing that as a top flight quarterback, you just don't normally want to go in. And he's going to be an early enrollee. You don't want to be someone who, in the midst of all of the various changes that come when you have a staff turnover, that you don't want to be that guy who's signing and doing all that before all the assistants are even hired for a staff and all that. I don't see that happening. I think he'll wind up at Florida State. I do think there's a remote possibility that he would wind up at UNC, but I do think he's probably going to wind up at Florida State. I think he recognizes the situation there, is amenable for him to get early playing time, regardless of whether Blackman plays ahead of him early or not. He's going to be the heir apparent after Blackman, or potentially beat Blackman out. It's one or the other. It's not like UNC where they've got two guys who are at least as good a prospects as him, maybe better prospects than him, who played some as true freshmen this year and are redshirting, and due to injury, actually, that either one of them would have taken over had they not gotten hurt once they actually showed their potential in games. But he would have to deal with both of those guys in front of him as redshirt freshman next year, and that's not ideal for him. So I think long term, I do expect Howell to wind up at Florida State. Got some other questions in there. We'll push those to the next one, but those were a few that I thought were worth addressing before getting into the conclusions for this podcast. And that has to do with the prediction and looking at this game. And the more I've looked at this game, the more I just go, you know, Florida should win this game, but I'm not sure. I really think Florida will win this game. Florida's been the better team, but matchup wise, I kind of like how Florida State matches up against Florida. And I think Florida's maybe not as good as what the thought is. I think ultimately, this game comes down to turnovers and to whether or not Florida State can prevent Florida from basically getting a lot of productivity on first and second down. And I think Florida State's defense will be able to do that. I think it's going to be tough sledding for Florida. I don't trust either quarterback. I do think, you know, maybe in what they're asking Franks to do, I think maybe I trust him a little more than Francois, but not by much. And I like Florida State's skill guys on the outside to be able to make a few more plays in this game in terms of the field shifting plays than what I see from Florida. So ultimately, I actually think Florida State may end up bowl eligible. I'm going to pick Florida State to win this game. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a comparable type of game to what we saw against Boston College, where offense is going to be tough to come by, where you're going to see a very physical game, and one or two big plays are going to turn the game. But I'm going to go with Florida State to win this game. I think Willie Taggart gets his big win on the season to finish the regular season and to keep the bowl eligibility streak going. I'm going to take Florida State to win this game 23-20. I think it's going to be a very, very, it's going to be a nail-biting game for all who are have a rooting interest in this. Should be fun for everybody, except for those who wind up on the losing end. And I'm looking forward to breaking this one down. As always, I want to thank my sponsors, Louis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida, and Garage Makeovers, the top-rated garage remodeling company in South Florida. I also want to thank the supporters from Patreon who are above the Secure the Bag level. That would be Hector Cartagena, Dan Alvarez, Keith Cheney, Neil Cook, and Bert Bertoldi. Thank you all for your generosity. Definitely helps keep this going and helps make those film sessions possible. Many thanks to all of you. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.